Reading from Colossians chapter 1, verses 15 to 20. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he may have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. We're going to move across to Hebrews chapter 1 and its verses 1 to 3. Excuse me. In the past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets at many times and in various ways, but in these last days he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through whom he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory, and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. After he had provided purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the Majesty in heaven.
A couple of weeks ago, I was with a couple of friends, and we were talking about cars because they had recently changed their cars. One had a Qashqai, and one had a Skoda of that kind of, you know, kind of Qashqai shape. There was a whole lot of cars that kind of shape. And we talked about the pros and cons of all those cars, and what was better, what wasn't better. And then we kind of thought about how modern cars are so much different from cars of old. Some of us who are older can remember the cars of old. And today's technology, today's cars are totally different. So I've got a picture of a little Mini. Did anybody ever drive a Mini? Anybody ever drive a Mini? Did you drive a Mini? Alan, you've driven everything. You're just a car enthusiast. But Minis were great. I didn't own one, but I drove one for a while, and because it was in the motor trade, as you know. Try to keep that quiet. Do not spread that rumor around. But you drove a Mini at about 25 miles an hour, and you thought you were Lewis Hamilton in a Formula One car. You were so close to the ground and so small, it just flew. It was spectacular. It was great fun. A little Mini. And then we have the modern-day Mini. Has anyone got a modern-day Mini? Oh, okay. And it's quite different, isn't it? Modern cars are different. But which is better? Which is better, the old Mini or the new? Who said old? Old. All the old people are saying old. Oh, they're not like, they don't make them like they used to. And yet if you compare the two, they're so much different, aren't they? Look at that. They've got similarities, haven't they? But they're really very different. They're a totally different size. Roughly the same shape. But look at that. Would you have imagined it could be so different? The old? The new? The old was great. It was fun. It did the job, but look at the new. So much better. It's bigger so you can get more people into it. Get a much more pleasant ride. The upholstery is much better. The suspension is much better. It just feels completely different. It's got power steering, the old one doesn't. Everything's different about it. It's got modern technology. The old Mini had, well, what is technology? The new one is much more fuel efficient. The new one is safer. It's got airbags and crumple zones and so on. The little one, well, it had nothing. You crashed. Well, if you survived, you were lucky. The new one's faster, from 0 to 60, much quicker. The new one in every way is better than the old one. And that's what the book of Hebrews is doing. It is comparing Jesus with everything that these people knew and coming out with the outcome that he is better. Not that the old ones were bad. It wasn't a difference between good and bad. It was a difference between good and better. And 13 times the writer in 13 chapters uses the word better, or in the NIV, it says superior. He doesn't use the word best, although that is the implication, because Jesus is the best. It just doesn't get any better than this. But 13 times throughout the book of Hebrews, he uses the word better. He's better than the angels. He's better than the old covenant. He's better than Moses. He's better than the priesthood. He's better than the temple. He's better, 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 better in every way. And all those things were good. But Jesus is better. He compares them. And over the next number of weeks, this we're going to look at. It's an amazing book. But the first comparison is in verse 1. In the past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets at many times and in various ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son. In these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son. Formerly, God has spoken through the prophets, the mouthpiece of God. And that was good. But in these last days, God has spoken through his Son. The Word become flesh. His final word was Jesus. He is better. And God spoke through the prophets, and God speaks through the Son. And who's speaking is really important. Who's talking is really important. Up in Belfast, we have a window cleaner. And I suppose, like many window cleaners, they've got an opinion on everything. Doesn't matter what you're talking about, religion, politics, sport. He's got lots of opinions. You want to hear him talk about the Irish rugby team. And no one really listens to that. But if Joe Schmidt, the Irish coach, speaks about the Irish rugby team, everybody listens. He's in the newspapers. He's on the TV. He's in the magazines. It depends on who's talking. And when God speaks, it would be foolish not to listen. And in these days, he has spoken through his Son. And these opening three verses, and that's all we're looking at, he paints this amazing picture, this magnificent picture of who Jesus is. This is one of the most amazing pictures in the whole of the Bible about who Jesus is, these three verses. And I want us to kind of get that, who Jesus is, not just the Jesus, yeah, Jesus, Jesus, but no, Jesus. Better, superior, best. And that is what he's doing. He's painting this amazing picture. He's writing to Christians from a Jewish background who are under horrific pressure to give up their faith, to return to their old ways. Horrific pressure. Many of them are doing that. And he's writing to them to encourage them with this beautiful picture of who Jesus is. Who is the one that we're following? Who's the one we put our trust in? Who's the one that died for you? Here he is. He is worthy of following no matter what happens, no matter the pressure you come under, the persecution you suffer. Jesus is better than the old ways. Why would you turn back? And that's why the writer is writing to encourage them that this is God's, as it says in the passage, he is God's heir. He is the creator of the universe. And that's a parallel to the passage that Sharon read in Colossians chapter 1. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He's before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Why would you give up following Jesus? And then in verse 3, we have a description of Jesus. The Son is the radiance of God's glory. Isn't that brilliant? The Son is the radiance of God's glory. You read it and you can just pass by it, but what does that mean? The Son is the radiance of God's glory. Whenever we think about God's glory in the Old Testament, we think about how it was manifested, the invisible God is manifested in the Shekinah cloud. This was a manifestation of God's glory. Think about all those pictures in the Old Testament of that. And there's something about the Shekinah glory, the Shekinah cloud, that has such an intensity that it has a blinding quality to it. Nine grey stones, where the sun shines all the time. The one thing we know not to do is to look directly into... My goodness, those lights are bright. Not to look directly into the sun. And why is that? Because it's dangerous. Because that would burn your eyes. We just know looking directly into the sun is just too much for us. And that's what it's like with God's glory. We're told over and over again that the brightness of his glory is too much for us. It is too bright for us. Do you remember the story where Moses said to God, I'd love to see your glory. Let me see your glory. And God says to him, well, this is my paraphrase. Moses, you don't know what you're asking. That's a dangerous thing to do. But I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to put you on this rock over here in the cleft of the rock. And I'm going to put my hand in front of you. And I will allow all my goodness to pass by you, my glory to pass by you. And as you look, you'll see the afterglow of my glory. You'll see my back. Because anything else would be too dangerous. You would die. But I will do that. And he put him in the cleft of the rock and he put his hand over him. And Moses was able to see the afterglow of God's glory. Today, to see God's glory, we look at Jesus, who is the radiance of God's glory. What the writer is saying, that the thing that makes God's glory bright is Jesus. He is the bright of the brightness. The second person of the Trinity, the Son of God, he is the brightness that we see in God's glory. Isn't that amazing? Jesus is the brightness of God's glory. The sun is the radiance of God's glory. And so we have this beautiful description of Jesus. The invisible become visible before our very eyes. And he is not only the brightness of God's glory, but he is the exact representation. An exact representation. Not like a painting that represents something or someone. It's like a photograph, but better than a photograph. When we see Jesus, as Jesus said to Philip, his disciple, when you see me, you have seen the Father. Not someone simply come from the Father, but you see the Father when you see Jesus. Isn't that amazing? Sometimes people might say, don't all roads lead to God? What is so special about Jesus? Isn't he just one of a number of religious leaders? Maybe we've been tempted to think that ourselves. Maybe we do. We serve God and know God and are saved by God our way, but other people have their way. So what's so special about Jesus? Well, Peter said in Acts chapter 4, salvation is found in no one else. For there is no other name under heaven given to mankind by which we must be saved. None. Paul, writing to Timothy, said, for there is one God and one mediator between God and mankind, and that man is Christ Jesus. Only one. And Jesus himself said, as you know, I'm the way. No one comes to the Father except by me. So the writer of the Hebrews is lifting this Jesus up high, the radiance, the brightness of God's glory, saying, this is the one. There is no other way. This is God incarnate. Isn't that amazing? Nothing compares to Christ. He is better. So God had come, Jesus had come, but why had he come? And verse 3 tells us, Jesus came, and this was the crux of what he was doing. This is the central focus of his mission. He had come to provide purification for sins. He came to provide purification for sins. And the writer of the Hebrews doesn't want us simply to know that it was a carpenter from Nazareth who did that, or simply the Messiah of the Jews. No, he wants us to know that this is the creator and the sustainer of everything. This is the one who came. And the fact that he came to us shows us how important we are, how important you are, or else why would he come? When I think back to the bad old days in Northern Ireland, whenever there was lots of trouble, and living through those times when bombs were an everyday occurrence, shootings were an everyday occurrence, horrific acts were an everyday occurrence. And I used to go to school in the centre of town, and there'd be bomb scares, and the buses wouldn't run, you were stuck. My family had a business in the centre of town, it was blown up by a car bomb. But you just got on with life, this is what happened. But then people began to take an interest in it, and politicians would come. And then I remember in 1995, President Bill Clinton came. It was a huge event. He came to switch on the Christmas tree. He came to meet many, many people. But it was a sign that people had come. And now Northern Ireland was top of the agenda. Not just in Ireland, but in the UK. Not just in the UK, but America. All the big names were coming to Northern Ireland, showing how important we were. And when Jesus stepped down into our earth, he did exactly the same thing. It was a sign that we are important to him. And that he came to do what he only could do. To make a way possible back to God through the cross. That's why he came. He was the only one that could do it. And so he came. It was an important thing. He came to do what he thought we needed, what he knew we needed. And that's what we needed so that we could have peace with God. And this is relevant for all of the world. We're going to have communion today. And again, we can take communion and it become a case of familiarity breeds indifference, contempt. But God has stepped into our world. This God that the writer of the Hebrews talks about, the one who is better, the one who the Old Testament looked towards, and Jesus is the fulfillment of the Old Testament. And this is our way of meeting God through this, through the cross, through Jesus who gave his life. So this book of Hebrews is an amazing book. And as we work our way through it, we will see an amazing God. Be excited by this Jesus. And no matter what happens in our lives, to say, we will never stop following him. Because he's better. He's best. He is superior. He's the one that creates peace and gives life.